be left out, a Zvihuda blamed Rav Hirsch for the entire reform movement. Basically, after this long conversation we had about, you know, negativity and being anti, so they were asking Rav Zvihuda, Rav Cook Rice, he says, that we must negate the communities that deny the centrality of Eretz Yisrael. We have to fight them. You know, so you can't just accept, you know, because what if somebody's wrong? What if somebody is preaching an ideology that's mistaken? You know, by the way, which is what they think about us. But anyway, okay? So if that's true, what do you have to do? See, he says you have to fight them. So the last shiur we learned, Rav Yehuda went through three things that he did not like about the German Jewish community. One, remember that he negated the Rambam. Two, about Eretz Yisrael. And three, this whole thing about the split between the German Jewish Orthodox community and the rest of the community, the idea that there should be a split, which we spoke about extensively, and is a very, very fascinating and important issue about this idea of separation in communities. And by the way, in regard to our conversation, I was thinking about that. This whole idea of separation and split is an Orthodox phenomenon. Only the Orthodox think that they should separate themselves because they're afraid of contamination or infiltration. Right? Rav Cook totally, totally disagreed with that idea. This idea of separation, of cutting yourself off from someone, no matter what, you know, these people did or didn't do or how they behaved. We're all Am Yisrael, like you said. You know, so this idea of separation and splitting, the problem is the more right-wing you are, and I'm saying that with a small R, the more right-wing you are, the more you believe that you have to separate in order to maintain a level of the level that you demand. You know, we struggle with this also. I was just telling my sister, we struggle with it. We're going to move to a city. So, do we move to Modi'in, where it's more modern, and you know, or you move to a Nofi Alon, which is much more, you know, much more...
It's Haredi with a different uniform.
Whatever. Yeah, it's however you want to say it. It's much, much more, you know, homogeneous.
Monochromatic.
Yeah, monochromatic. Much, much more. You know, and what do you want your kids to be exposed to, and how much you expose them? It's a difficult, difficult question. I don't even know how you answer that question. You know? Anyway.
Although the schools there allow you to choose exactly which ideology you would like them to receive.
Right. You have much greater choice in school, so you can...
You can be in Modi'in and go to the whatever the Akiva equivalent or whatever the modern Orthodox equivalent, as opposed to a more secular education.
Right, or the more religious or more subgroupy thing or whatever. Okay, in Zayesha Arab, we're on page 60. Macho v'ativ esen. What should I do? So Orthodoxy, Yiddishkeit, Torah mitzvos is a chashuv ma'od. Right, Torah mitzvos is very important. Yafem ma'od, very nice. Lo sholulim anachnu, this is now he's quoting Rav Cook. Lo sholulim anachnu kol min tziyur v'havana ham yusad al yashrut v'rikshei deyach v'yirat shamayim bezis rashi. We do not, Rav Cook writes, we do not negate any understanding or perspective founded on yashrus, on straightness, and feelings of yirat shamayim in any form. Rak, meaning, he's saying, we're not negating, the way he's understanding every Haredi attitude there is. But what are we negating? Rak et oto hatsad, the side, shishitaka zo tachot lishlol et harazim v'at hashpatam v'dola ruach umam. Right? There are, in these ideologies, though, there's an aspect that wants to negate the importance of these razim, the secrets of Torah. Remember, Cook wrote that the secrets of Torah and the fundamental nature and how they affect ruach ha'umah, the spirit of the nation. You don't fight with the whole ideology. You say, yeah, your ideology, what's good about it is good. But what's bad about it, the part that denies the spirit of the nation and the growth of Am Yisrael and the umah, the nation of Israel, that you have to fight. Right? That's why we fight. Zeh chisaron gadol. It's a big short term. Chisaron b'yadut. Chisaron b'yiddishkeit. This is a spiritual tragedy. We have to fight it. The etza with advice, with knowledge and understanding, with holiness and strength. So that's what Cook says. Cook himself says sometimes you have to disagree, you have to fight, you have to argue, you have to push your point, because as much as they're right, but there are things about them that are incorrect and that have to be corrected. And I think that's a legitimate perspective. Sheva.
he's talking about the secular movement?
No. I think he's talking about the religious movement. He's talking about the religious movement that denies the this underlying nature.
The way he says the fight is be'etzah.
Right, holy, no, like a holy fight. You fight the holy fight, not a fist fight.
Throwing rocks.
Who throws rocks? Okay, meaning because you believe they're incorrect, so you have to press your point. You don't just say, oh, you know, we should all just get along and we're not going to talk about these things.
Right.
No, it has to be discussed. Ma kavanat harav sheila. So this is, remember, he's giving this in a shir, so people were asking questions. So Rabbi Nir, who edited the book, He sometimes will go back and forth with questions that really bring out what Cook was writing about. Ma kavanat harav b'milim hashpa'atam hagdola al ruach ha'uma. What did Rav Cook mean when he said that these razim, remember the razim are the secret hidden forces, the underlying razim, the hidden secrets of the Jewish nation. So what does he mean when he says they're great influence on the spirit of the nation? Hayim ze rak inyan Eretz Yisrael. Right. Meaning he was talking about the power of Nistar, of that which is hidden. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? I have no idea what I mean. Gabe, how would you describe the meaning in Judaism? Mm-hmm. You have the halakha as it is, you have the Torah, you have the tradition as it is, but then there's a whole thought that's really, it's called Kabbalah. We call it Kabbalah, but it's not just Kabbalah. There's a whole method of thought and ideology and tradition, and also, but it's also the study of the understanding of what lies beneath.
The more mystical side.
Right. You know.
Like Nicholas,
I can't actually describe it to you.
Of observance.
Of the Jewish people, of Torah, of all of it, of everything. I mean, would that be a fair way to say?
More, I guess, revealed.
Right. Meaning, everything you do, why do you put on tefillin? You put on tefillin because God binds you. But the tefillin has a power that we can't perceive and we can't understand. Right? But even more than that, so Rav Cook saw it in terms of the nation of Israel. Like, the Jewish people have a power. The land of Israel has a power. But all this power, this connection, this connectivity, comes through the Nistar, through the hidden. Through these razin, right? It's all intertwined. It's all integrated. It's all connected, right? So it could be mitzvahs. It could be the Jewish people. It could be Torah. It could be learning. It could be a method of study. When you study Nistar, you're able to see how this is all one thing. It's all connected. Okay. So he says there are certain communities that negate, that don't acknowledge the importance of this Nistar, this hiddenness. Mm-hmm. He says, what does it mean? Is it only Israel? Answer: Tshuva. Shulchan Aruch. Yesh man kama halachot api hazohar. You find the Shulchan Aruch many halachot, a number of halachot in the Zohar. Hashva'ashal razeh ha-Torah, the influence of the secrets of the Torah, shal Torah tanista, the Torah of the hidden. Yesh l'sidrei Torah hashva'ag norah ruach chayim shal yahadut. See, it's this is what we're talking about, right? The it's the spirit of life of Judaism. Meaning, is it a series of laws and rules and regulations, or is it a worldview? Those are very different things. You know, how you live your life, you know, that's a really, really very different thing. It's almost like, you know, when you're treating a patient. Right? Are you going down the checklist? Did I check this? Did I check that? Did I check this? Did I check that? Mm-hmm. Or are you treating? So you ask me, what's the difference between the two?
It's focusing on the details or holistic.
Getting caught up in the trees.
Right, exactly. But understanding that treating, you know, being a doctor is a whole mentality. It's an attitude, it's a way of looking at things, as opposed to saying, okay, next step, like, you know, on the checklist that you're saying, did you do this? Did you do that? You know?
I guess that's when the residents would stop listening to me. We're not just checking this and this. We're looking at the whole person.
I'm sorry, but you can't tell them. And by the way, that's the irony. You can't tell them that.
They have to figure that out.
Yes, that's now you're starting to understand this there.
You got
to
get it.
Right.
You
either have it or you don't. It cannot be taught. It has to be felt.
That's a whole, I guess, a source of discord within my department. Because some people think that when you're teaching residents that medicine is essentially self-taught. And that, yes, you can give them some pointers, but either they got it or they don't. Whereas the program director, from his perspective, is that, you know, there should be a science behind teaching. You just can't expect when the person shows up comes to work and does the rotations, which means they took all the classes, doesn't mean that at the end they know how to be, you know, a doctor.
See, the problem, that is the problem with institutionalizing any type of education. So you try to find a balance. I mean, medicine actually does it better than most.
Because we actually teach...
by doing.
Our method of teaching is that we've got the set curriculum, we've had it since the dawn of time, you come, you do it, in the end, you're done.
No, but you're not.
And for most people, it turns out okay. But
no, you're not.
Because people really needed more...
In medicine, the brilliance of medicine is you learn by doing it. You're forcing your residents to do what it is they need to do under the watchful eye, hopefully, of somebody. You know what I'm saying? And the hope is that as they do this, as they gain this experience, they'll develop that feel on their own. Can you imagine?
But they've all had the same experience.
Can you imagine somebody sending
at the
out?
End of 3 years,
yeah.
There's a wide variety of talent of the graduating residency class. And they all got the same thing.
Can you imagine sending them out with no experience, just classroom experience? Okay, go treat. Have fun.
Sort of the way it used to be. You would go and you would apprentice with somebody for like a year, and then all of a sudden you'd be a doctor. Things are a little more, you know, structured in the past, let's say 100 years.
Right.
But they all got the same education, and yet at the end they don't have the same skill set. And it's not even close either.
Really? I mean, now, when they go out and interview, do they call you and say, is this guy any good? Do they call you up when these guys go out?
We get called on them.
Yeah.
That's what the program director earns his salt.
Why, by spinning?
He's got to spin it, but he's also got to tell him.
Yeah.
He's got to tell him the
he's
same.
A very good resident.
He's got to tell
very
him the right things resident. Because you know that same program is going to call the next year
right.
And say, "Listen, you gave us this guy last year. He is awful. He basically sandbagged us. You said he was fine.
Yeah.
And now we got another guy from your program, and you're telling me he's fine too. Well, I don't know if I want to take him on that."
So, but that's exactly my point. Torah isn't just, and this I think is a big negative about modern orthodoxy in general, that people see it as a series of steps. It's a series of rituals that you have to do. You know, and however I can short it or whatever I do want to do or don't want to do, you know what I'm saying? I pick and choose or I don't. And as opposed to saying it's a worldview, it's a perspective, it's a life attitude. You know, and I'm going to sort of embrace it to the best of my ability. And once you sort of do that, once you experience it and embrace it, then you begin to appreciate it. So the same thing is true, he says, of mistar, of hiddenness. Right? You know, you're going to have to get it. You have to see it, you have to feel it, and when you feel it, then it's there. And it applies not just about Israel, it applies about all kinds of different things. Not only certain halakha that appeals applies in, but it's there. And so sometimes you feel it, and many times you don't. Shaila, question. Ruach ha'umah, the spirit of the nation. Listen to the spirit of the people. Hakavanah, b'chad ha'ma'asi. Is that like is there like a practical implication to that? Answer. Tshuva. Ruach ha'umah mitgaleh b'Torah u'mitzvot. It's revealed in Torah mitzvot, the spirit of the Jewish people. Mitgaleh b'shulchan aruch. It's revealed in shulchan aruch. U'b'sitrei Rebbe Isaiah Torah yesh al kach hashpa'a gdola. Right, and this hiddenness in the Torah has a great influence. You know, I would say, by the way, Rav Kook won this argument about Israel. Right? Is the Jewish people pro-Israel or anti-Israel? Right? That's the spirit of the nation. Are we pro-Israel or are we not? So there was a long period of time where the religious Jews were anti-Israel. Right? That was the Ruach HaUma. Right? Are we pro? I mean, good question. Are we pro? Are we pro-work?
Orthodox agreed.
Yeah. Are we pro-work or are we anti-work? Mm-hmm. That's a big debate now. And what's the spirit of the nation? Right? Is it important to do, or is it really a waste of time, a concession to reality? It's a big debate. The spirit of the nation. What else?
That is a debate.
In the halls of... what is the debate?
In the halls of the Kollel.
When your children go to school, are they taught that it's good to work and they should feel good about being a productive citizen? Or never... And you have some people have to work, but only the only reason that they can justify it is because they're supporting other people learning.
That's what most people think. Mm-hmm. Not so much in this. That's why I just said, you know, Rabbi Weizmann, I'm listening right now. He's very good, but he says, yeah, I wish you all would stay in Kollel all the time, but some people have to go.
That's what he said?
He said, I respect him greatly. They keep kavod and they down there, you know. But he sounded very much like he was talking about danger, which is true. But there is a big danger in Goshen. Well, but I think from what I hear, especially Hasidic approach.
Yeah.
You have to go. That's your
to work.
Not to sit. You have to go to the wall.
Yeah. Yes. So that's a big debate in Judaism today. It's a big debate. How much to go in the world? Shayla. How does it express itself? Al seder hayadut, right? In the order of Judaism, the Dugma, for example, chulim rabim biyadut omrim l'shum yichud kud shabrichu. Like a lot of Jews that say before they do a mitzvah, l'shum yichud kud shabrichu. That's like a preamble to doing a mitzvah in the sake of the unity of the name of God. Ruach alma mitgaleh biyiddishkeit normali. Right, the spirit of the nation reveals itself in normal Yiddishkeit, be'emunah, be'torah, be'mitzvos. Torah and mitzvos calls them b'toch achiza v'hitkashrut, b'toch shaychut b'sitrei Torah. So he says, I think what he's saying is, it's there, it's all around you in a sense. Right, the hiddenness is there, because without it would be dry and missing something, and people would not be compelled to be observant the way they are. Shayla, question. כיצב ניתן לתבוע הכרת ערכה של ארץ ישראל מאדם פשוט שרחוק מהכרה של הצלת הרזים? This is a person who is distant from this recognition of these razim, these powerful forces. How can you ask this guy to recognize the importance of Israel? I now will digress and tell you a story. Over Shabbos, I spoke about Yerushalayim a number of times, about the importance of the unity of Jerusalem, and etc., etc. Somebody came to me this week and he said, you know, we keep pushing the unity of Jerusalem and it's nice and it's important. I guess it's important. He said, from a security perspective, I'm there. I understand it. He said, but they weren't preaching security. They were preaching the importance of the unity of Jerusalem. He said, what's so important about the unity of Jerusalem? Who cares? You know, yeah, you dive into Jerusalem. Jerusalem is a seat of holiness. Who cares whether it's unified or not? So I had two comments to that. My first comment is, I was grasping for a way of articulating an answer. But my second reaction was, man, me and this person are just from totally different planets. And I didn't think he was a bad person. But, like, how could you say, who cares about something that I just feel is, in my heart, essential that Jews be in charge, you know, in control of Yerushalayim. You understand what I'm saying? And they said, what's my answer? I gave him an answer, but I didn't think it was so great. I said, but I believe I said, you know, God gave us a gift.
I don't know, you either get it or you don't.
Right, that's exactly the point. What do you mean? How can you answer that question? You know, what kind of question is that? Like, I felt actually quite bad for her, in a sense, to ask that question. Here, you know, God gave us Jerusalem, we united it, and, you know, clearly he wants it to be under the rule of the Jewish people and the control of the Jewish people, and that elevates its holiness and it makes it a more unique place and a more special.
Learn.
What?
He
said, how does it spiritually different whether Jerusalem is controlled by the Jewish people or not controlled by the Jewish people? And I can't prove it to you. I just know that it's true.
So maybe in a
you know what I'm saying?
Like, in a term he would understand or she would understand whoever this person was,
yeah.
You could tell him that 65 years ago, if a Jew wanted to go to the
Kotel. No, he said, let's say all being equal. It was internationalized and you could go. It's not a question of...
It's not a question of security.
Right, not security.
Okay. So you know what? Maybe in a non-religious...
No, this guy isn't from Jew.
You know what I'm saying? From a non-religious
very
state.
Very from.
If you're saying it's a non-religious state, then maybe...
You don't think it makes a difference? So you and I are different planets too, then?
No, because... No, I'm saying when you look at it from a religious point of view, it makes no sense.
What makes no sense?
To split up Yerushalayim, there's no way it could be...
Right.
Right. I'm saying, no.
No, he's not asking, this is a firm person saying, who cares, what's the difference?
Right, but I'm saying that's not... From
he's not the asking how could be... Yeah, it is.
No, it can't, I'm saying that, he's saying it, but I'm saying it's like what Rav Soloveitchik was saying before, like, you know, somebody who doesn't understand, you know what I'm saying, when he doesn't understand, it's still in the depths of his heart. You know what I'm saying? If you got to the depths of his heart, and to his religious neshama, or whatever you want to call it, he would not be able to have that position.
He couldn't.
No.
So that's
so what he's saying.
So he's saying. So I think this is what Rav Kook is saying. That's a person who doesn't Like, you know what I'm saying? Show me the Shulchan Aruch where it says Yerushalayim has to be united. Right. So the Shulchan Aruch, like, you know, like, there's no sin in the Shulchan Aruch, but it's like the whole everything. It's the whole understanding, you know, like.
The other thing is it's a moral blow.
That's not the point. Again,
no,
saying,
maybe that's
point.
What he wanted to hear.
It's not the
point. That, you know, that's what I'm saying.
You know, you read about Yerushalayim and the centrality it has and how God wants it to be a united city, a single city, under a Jewish city, a holy city. right. You know, David HaMelech understood that it had to be united. It was two that had to be connected into one. Everybody knows that.
It really bothers my evangelical friend. I think I've told you this before.
Yeah.
He says, how can you give away what God has given you?
Hey, good question.
Because you can't give it away.
I'm with you. I want to meet this guy.
Things are very objective.
He's right. Your objective is not objective. Okay, let's... he says, so how can I teach somebody who doesn't recognize the razim, this, you know what I'm saying, the secrets, how can I teach him? Shiva, ani omer, shi efshar. You can't. Right, the understanding is that there's no possible completeness of faith. You will not appreciate the fundamental nature of Eretz Yisrael unless you let go of your need to see everything in black and white and begin to see things in a broader perspective, begin to see the background, begin to understand and appreciate that there's something beneath, something hidden. He says, so then how can we blame this person? Yeah. Can we blame him? Can. The answer is, sure can. It depends how he is, you know, separated, assimilated from this idea. There are some people where their worldview is we have to do as many mitzvahs as we can. You know, active mitzvahs. Anachnu kozakim shel ribono shel olam. He says, we are the Cossacks. We're in the army of God. In Ken, you call him yot apikorsi mekami mitzvahs. Isn't that very harsh? He says, you can be an apikores who fulfills the mitzvahs. And God said, do it, I'm doing it. Without trying to get to any deeper recognition, any deeper understanding. Anu mabshichei hapushim. We are the descendants of the Prushim, the separatists, not the Tzedukim. So we have to decide what kind of Prushim. The Gemara Sota, Nitzkar Bitui Kazeh. The Gemara Sota, there's a phrase, Makos Prushim. What's Makos Prushim? Makos means the afflicted Prushim, the affliction of the Prushim separatists. For example, Yeshimi Perush Kazeh, Bitui Yuchad. Tell me what to do and I'll do it. I am obligated. Tell me what I have to do. Right? He says that's dry, totally dry. Bili emuna, no faith. Bili chiyuniyut, no vitality, no holiness. Bili hachovah, but too low. Perform the obligation no more. Chovah letzavah chadomeh. External, shigratiyut is rote. Right? Why do you do the mitzvah? Because we have to shake the lulav. Right? By putting tefillin, because God told me to wrap my arm in tefillin. Right? That's what I do. Tell me what to do when I do it, because God told me to do it. Where is the connection? Where is the spirituality? Where's the depth? Where's the religiosity? Where's the passion? Where's the fire? No fire, just wrapping my hand in the filling. You know? Zenik Revelation of the Gemara. Macho Bati Vasana. Tell me what to do and I'll do it. Lignai. Bad. Of Ahmed Parush. Parush, a real separatist. Who Hem Sheikh. Shall be so at Torah Shabbat Pebish Lemuta. The whole Torah Shabbat Pebish. The whole over Torah. Yeshman Tzam Kazah. And there is, unfortunately, a kind of a possibility of Yachas Shal Shigratiyut. A relationship of roteness, Vichitzoniyut. An externality. See, you know what I'm saying? He's trying to articulate something that you have to either accept or you don't. He's talking about, you know, like everything, like, think of any example, like music, okay? Somebody can play a piece, and it's just dead. Did he get anything wrong? No, he played it perfectly. He played it flawlessly. Right? But he's dead. Why? Because the music is supposed to convey a certain passion, a certain depth. And you can do anything like that.
You have to be able to either sense or understand what the deeper meaning is.
You have to be A, looking for a deeper meaning, and B, willing to see it. Right. And that's exactly what he was saying. You know, you could be dry, it could be a dryness, it could be an emptiness. So that person is that person, he says, can you complain about that person? Yes, he says. You can't be a blind robot. The job of a Jew is not to be a robot. His job is to search. Hey, you're bothered, okay? I said, don't be bothered by it, you know, okay? Huh? That maybe that in a sense is good. You want everybody to be together. You feel it bothers you.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean? I think you just can't spend your life focusing on the negative.
Of course not. No.
You know what I mean? Like that's
if you get
can't,
caught up
just drive you crazy.
In the peripheral.
Correct, it drives you crazy.
Right.
You know, but that being said, you have to open your eyes and say, you know, why are we doing this? You know, and this is, I guess, something that's been bothering me recently. Like, why are we going to shul? What are we doing? What's the point? You know, what do you want to get out of this? And I think a lot of people, the answer is nothing.
Nothing.
I'm kind of happy with what it is. You know what I mean? It's kind of the way I was raised or just what I've gotten into doing. I'm not looking to get much of anything out of this. And I think Mark Cook's point is that's the worst thing that could be.
Is this... It's the demolition of my life, and it's about Daniel, but anyway, he says, one issue was that after 8 years in Yeshiva came to him, he said, I listened to so many shulim speeches, and no one ever mentioned God. He says, you have to doubt, you have to do, but never said who are you doubting to.
Yeah.
So what I basically said, and he's saying a lot of people completely disconnected.
Yes.
You have to be connected.
You should know. I've heard that a lot. So I make it a point to speak about God.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? I often find it so interesting. I'm reading about a book called Mornings on Horseback about Theodore Roosevelt and when he was raised. This is upbringing. Started slow, but it's an amazing book. His father was an amazing, amazing man. And the way they... And I was thinking about this because in his diary, like he had verses in Psalms that he liked to quote that were meaningful to him. Who do we know? Do you know anybody that quotes the Tanakh? And I think the reason is because it's our foreign language to us. Right? It doesn't speak to us. The Bible doesn't speak to us. And the poetry of the Bible doesn't really mean anything to us. You know what I'm saying? But that vitality, that energy, I envy the... You ever see like a Christian pray in a sense? It's their language. They're speaking to God in their language. There's no disconnect. When we speak to God, we speak to God in another language. And so that almost ritualizes it, that rotes it to something. You know, how many people could really say on Shabbos, they come to Shul any day and say, they're talking to God. They're speaking to the Kodesh Baruch Hu.
They do talk about this. At least they talk about this.
Okay, it's important to talk about.
Yeah.
How have I?
No,
that's exactly, and that's what he's talking about. Are you saying the words? Or are you speaking to God? Are you doing the action? Or are you connecting at a deeper level, a much deeper level? And it's the same action. You can look at somebody, and we're both doing the same thing. But it's a world of difference. It says if you're into the world, if you're into that world, you'll get Eretz Yisrael. You'll just get it. And if you're not... Okay. Sorry about the short shift.